future is in peril. What we need now is a shining hope. Bringing the nation back. One voter at a time. This is Aaron McGrady.
Welcome to tonight's show, everybody. I've got a fabulous show for you today. I'm very excited about this. In just a few moments, I will be speaking with Dr. Carol Swain. She's a professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University. And then, as always, in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking and devoting that to how we are going to defeat our President Barack Obama. You know, it is extremely imperative that we defeat him this time. We cannot tolerate or stand another 4 years of the same failed policies that we've put up with for the past 3.5 years. You know, he didn't have a record to stand on when he became president, and he surely does not have a record now that he has been president. But I am very excited about our guest today. As I previously said, it is Dr. Carol Swain. She is a law professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University. She's an expert in the field of politics, Congress, race relations, immigration, black leadership, voting rights, and many others. And she is author of the book, Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise. And you've seen her on multiple shows, especially Fox News Channel's Hannity with Sean Hannity. And her op-eds have appeared in numerous publications, such as the New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Times, and USA Today. Dr. Carol Swain, welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure. How are you?
Oh, and the pleasure is all mine. I am doing great. How's everything in Nashville?
Busy.
No, I bet. Well, you know, to many of our listeners, with you being a professor of law and appearing on numerous television shows, you know, some of our listeners may think that you were, you know, born into a life of luxury, but, you know, that's exactly the opposite. You've really worked for everything you've had. You were a high school dropout, a teenage mother. Going from a background like that, you know, it would have been very easy just to throw in the towel. What drove you to be as successful as you are today?
Of course, and may I say it was the grace of God, but I guess I always had the attitude that if I worked hard enough, that I could achieve.
Right.
And I believed in the American dream. I actually believed that if you set goals and you worked hard, that, you know, you wouldn't achieve everything you wanted, but even if you fell short, you still would be better off than where you started.
Right.
So I've always been goal-oriented, and I think that that was a factor. And I never looked at myself and looked in the mirror and said, oh, you're a black woman, everything's stacked against you, and you might as well not, you know, try.
Right.
I never allowed my race and my poverty growing up, any of that stuff to prevent me from trying to get to the next level.
Okay. Well, you know, we've came a long way in America with racial relations, but we've still got a long way to go. What do you think the future hurdles are, and what's the next hurdle that we need to overcome?
The next hurdle is that we need a critical mass of black people to realize that what we've been doing the last 50 years hasn't been working so well, and that there was a time when it made sense to do civil rights marches and boycotts. I think that those methods are less effective today, and they are exploited and misused a lot of times by young people, that we would be better off as a group if we had a different racial paradigm. And I think that we need to turn our attention back to the teachings of you know, Booker T. Washington, that talked about self-reliance and talked about leading morally upright lives. Because one of the things that we have allowed to happen in the black community, we have allowed crime to take over, the unwed motherhood. a lot of behaviors in our communities are leading us down a destructive path, and no amount of government assistance can change that, but we have the power to change how we see ourselves, how we think about ourselves, and our future.
What's it going to take? I know, you know, it's not going to be government, but, you know, really, how can we get that changed, you know, working from the inside out to have people realize that there's a better life and a better way, and that, you know, this is America. This is the, you know, the best country in the world, and that, you know, it is what they make of it. How can we have them have the desire and instill in them the will to succeed?
I think that we get, if we can get enough people to just look at, introspectively, look at their situations and the people that are around them, mm-hmm. it's clear that something is not working for Black America. One of the things that's not working very well is that 92% of us are in one political party. Mm-hmm. And in America, we have a two-party system. It makes sense to have leverage with both political parties. It does not make sense for Black Americans all to be in the Democratic Party, creating a situation where Democrats don't have to do anything to get Black votes. All they have to do is, around Election Day, make sure that people go to the polls, because if they go to the polls, they're going to vote for the Democrat. And Black people have very little to show for their votes.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point, because, you know, I was thinking earlier today that, you know, Barack Obama, you know, overwhelmingly carried the Black vote back when he won the presidency. But do you think that now that, and I, the best word, I guess, is the novelty of the first Black president is over, that he will not have such of a turnout, especially with, you know, the accomplishments or lack of accomplishments, I guess I should say, that he's had since he's been in office? Do you think that that turnout will be down, or will it be back up again?
Well, you know, part of my theory that some people were offended by, but I stand by it, I think that part of the exploitation of the Trayvon Martin situation is related to electoral politics, that Democrats know that they're not likely to get as high a Black turnout as they had in the last election. Because most Black people, not only have their lives not improved, in some cases their lives have worsened. And they can take an issue because of that. People that benefit from keeping the races stirred up, they can use an issue like Trayvon Martin. It was my understanding that there were voter registration drives taking place during some of the marches, and Jesse Jackson urged the marchers to wear their hoodies to the polls. And so it's clear that there are some members of the Democratic Party that tried to exploit the Trayvon Martin situation for political purposes, and maybe they think that if you get enough Black people worked up, that they will be mobilized and they'll go to the polls and vote Democratic.
Now, do you think that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, they're hurting the cause rather than helping?
Definitely, it's not what I think. It's like what I know, and you know, and a whole bunch of other people know it too. They tend to show up in communities when there's a high-profile incident. They show up, they have their press conferences, that they're going to do marches, they do all of that stuff, and then they leave, go home, usually with their pockets lined, and the people in the community have to deal with the aftermath of everything that transpires. And so when they leave the communities are not left better off as far as race relations.
In previous interviews, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you've said that you believe that race relations will get worse before it gets better. What do you mean by that?
I do, because right now we have a government that, again, it seems like that they fan the flames of racism, or they take positions that are not conducive to bringing us together as Americans. And when you have the economy being the way it is, a lot of uncertainty about the future, it can cause people to distrust others of that's not of the same race, and it can create a competition between and among groups that's not really healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is ripe for exploitation.
You know, one thing that really woke me up to racism in America, and of course I've always been aware of it, but this movie actually really touched me, The Help. And after I saw the movie The Help, you know, that's all I literally could think about for the next 2 or 3 days. And one question that came to my mind, and I would love to ask you this, and I've mentioned this to other people, and they just were taken aback that I even would say such a thing. But, you know, that generation of Americans, you know, or, you know, in their 60s, 70s, and, you know, if I were treated like that, like the women were treated in The Help, and if I were the people treating the women like that, you know, those ideas all these years later would still be in my mind. And, you know, whether it was how I treated or the mentality back then, is it going to take the newer generation to take over and almost the older generation to die out to help race relations?
Well, I'm not so impressed with the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
I was not very impressed by those college students that shut down the police department in Sanford, Florida. It's going to take a new paradigm, a new way of thinking in the black community, and at the root has to be some self-help and some personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need mobs of black people, youth, going out attacking white people or going into stores and stealing merchandise off the shelves. There are so many behaviors that we as black people choose that, all of us don't choose those behaviors, but enough that it affects the rest of us. And I think that key is taking responsibility for our actions, and if it's, you know, maybe sometimes for the actions of others, our relatives, our children, and holding them accountable, holding them to high standards. We do have a problem in the black community with criminal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And we should not, you know, just be so focused on, you know, when there's a tragedy, but be focused on the crimes that are taking place every day all around us.
Right. One question I did want to ask you, too, and you are an expert also on immigration. And the Supreme Court a few weeks ago, you know, heard the Arizona immigration case, but they haven't yet announced their decision. And to me, the administration just did a poor, poor job on articulating the government's point. How do you think that case will come out? And because, you know, to me, Arizona was just upholding the federal law. But
well,
I hope
it comes out strongly in favor of federalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of our constitutional system. And when you have states that are confronting unique problems, Arizona's a border state. They have to look after the welfare of all of their citizens. And I live in Tennessee. I don't know what it's like to live in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
I think states have to have the latitude to make the laws that benefit their citizens, and it's part of protecting the general welfare of the citizenry.
Well, how important is it also this upcoming election? Is it most important in our generation or in our history? Or is it just the media hyping it up, saying, you know, it seems like every year, every election year, they say this is the most important?
Well, you know, there are people that believe that if Barack Obama gets 4 more years, that America would not be recognizable at the end by 2016. It's barely recognizable now. And but I'm not wildly enthusiastic about Mitt Romney.
Right.
I'm not sure why the American system doesn't generate better candidates on both sides. But Barack Obama clearly was not, you know, he was too inexperienced for the job. He made a lot of mistakes along the way. It would be great if we had people who were seasoned, even if they were seasoned politicians, but people that just clearly loved America, feared God and wanted to do what was best for all the citizens, not one particular group, but what's best for everyone. That's the kind of leader I would like to see elected to the presidency. And right now, you look at the candidates, so many of them are all about
Are you still with us? I think we lost her. Well, I think we lost Dr. Swain, and that is unfortunate because we were having a great discussion, and she is just a whole lot of knowledge. You know, she's an expert on many, many fields, and, you know, it's a shame that we lost her call. But we were talking to expert in politics, in law, in race relations, Dr. Carol Swain. Dr. Carol Swain, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. I really do appreciate it. Next, we're going to talk about, before we get to the news, and we'll have about 15 minutes before we get to the news, the, you know, we talked about the Supreme Court and the Arizona immigration case, and you know, I really do hope that that comes out in Arizona's favor. Because like Dr. Swain was saying, you know, we don't know what Arizona has to go through. I know what Georgia has to go through, but, you know, you listening out there, you may not know what Georgia has to go through. So, you know, how can the United States government in Washington, D.C., how can they know what needs to happen in every single state? You cannot, you know, have it the same thing across the board. You know, there's different regions, different areas, different personalities, different people, different cultures, and you just cannot have this, you know, be mandated from Washington, D.C. All Arizona was trying to do was to keep up and enforce what the federal government was not doing, which was enforcing the federal law. You know, and I think, you know, if we do not get tough on immigration, and I did not get a chance to ask Dr. Swain this, but if we do not get tough on immigration, we are in for it with terrorism. We are really in for it. You know, they could come in through Mexico, they could come in through Canada, you know, as you heard today, and we're going to play a little bit of this in just a little bit, but we had a potentially a huge terrorist attack. Someone was in an airplane on his way to the United States, and it was another underwear bomber. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. You know, we have got to get tough on terrorism. We cannot continue the same old, you know, the TSA. We need to racially profile. And I know a lot of you out there are just about to fall out of your seat with me saying that. Yes, we need to profile. El Al, the airline, when they're screening people, when they're boarding the plane, they racially profile. And you know what? They've never had one terrorist attack, one hijacking, nothing in their history. You know, and then our full body scanners that we have at the airports right now, the full body scanners, you know, if you were to swallow a baggie, if you were to swallow a baggie or a bomb, the full body scanners can't tell that. You know, it's just very frustrating and aggravating to me that people, you know, think that sending somebody through a body scanner is going to work at the airports. Patting down people is going to work. Now, what if we had a terrorist come in and they swallowed a bomb? Or, pardon me, or had something up their hind end, their tail? You know, how's that body scanner going to work if it's inside of you? you know, they can make bombs in such a fashion that came out today that if you swallow it, the full body scanners at the airport's not going to pick it up. Oh, it's just so aggravating to me. You know, we are becoming a society of political correctness, and it is going to destroy this country. And then we have France over there. I tell you what, Europe's just going down south, too. They elected a socialist president today. I don't know if you heard that. Maybe Barack Obama can go over there and become buddies with him. It's just absolutely ridiculous what we're going through as a country, what the world is going through. You know, it seems like to me every time the economy goes down that people take advantage of the American people, the citizens of the entire world, really. Because they know that if they have all these programs, these socialist programs, these Marxist programs, that people need help. People want a handout just to survive. And that is the prime time that these hoodlums, these so-called leaders, the people that have nothing but their own best interests at heart, that's when they can come in and take advantage of the people. When they're hurting, give them a handout. And what do? They just make them more reliant on government. More reliant on government. And that gives them the power. If you want to call into the show, the number is 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. And that's exactly what's happening in the United States right now. People are becoming more and more reliant on the government. And what is a politician's number one job? It's not to help you out. It's not to help me out. Why would they want to do that? They want to get reelected. You know what? If people, and when I say people, I mean the politicians up in Washington, D.C. that have no idea what they're doing. And we have a Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, that should have lost, but the people of Nevada, I don't know what they were thinking. You know, they complain because they have to work too much. They complain because they have to work 12, 13, 14 hours a day. How many of you would like a job where you get to work, and I say get to, not have to, get to work 12, 13, 14 hours a day because you have no job, but then there's the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, complaining because he has to work 12, 13, 14 hours to better the country. That's what he signed up for, but that's the type of politicians we have out there, the ones that just want to continuously have you rely on them so they can get reelected. The politician's number one job isn't to help me or you. It's for them to get reelected. You know what? I'm actually going to play that clip right now of Harry Reid wanting to go back to Nevada because he's complaining about having to work, and he wants to go see his pomegranate trees and his figs. Listen to this.
And this has been a pretty hard work period we've had. Last two weekends and working late. And I think the Senate deserves to be able to go home as soon as we can. If there were ever a time when we need to work with our constituents, it's now. And for me personally, I've been here for a long time. I have a home in Nevada that I haven't seen in months. My pomegranate trees are, I'm told, blossoming, and some pomegranates on them. I have some fig trees and roses and stuff that I just haven't seen. So I have constituents that I'm anxious to see, friends I need to visit with, relatives I need to visit with. So as soon as we can.
You know, that just makes me sick. I had to cut that off. It just makes me absolutely sick. He has constituents that he wants to see. He doesn't have any constituents that he wants to see. You know, the day of the Congress recessing to take a break, those days are over. That's before the internet. That's before telephones. That's before text messaging. That's before Twitter. That's before Facebook. when you actually had to go back to communicate with your constituents. But what can they do now? They can pick up their cell phone. They're not even charged long distance and give you a call. They can send you a message on Twitter and give you a tweet. Of course, they could also send you the snail mail. But who does that really anymore? You know, then we have the Postal Service whining and complaining because their services aren't needed. Maybe they should do what every other business in the United States needs to do and change and modify. You know, maybe they need to lay off some people. And if you're with the Postal Service, sorry. They need to lay off people like any other business would do. You know, they keep spending our taxpayer dollars. And the only time people use the mail anymore is to send greeting cards or occasionally send a check. Most people use the internet to do their banking, to pay bills. It's absolutely ridiculous. We need someone in office that is going to go in there and cut all this stupid spending, stuff that doesn't make sense. I mean, when's the last time that you went to the post office and dropped a letter off? 646-200-3400 is the number to the show. You know, maybe you send a care package. That's cheaper still than FedEx and UPS. But I'll tell you what, FedEx and UPS, they're privatized. They do a much better job. They're on time a lot more than the government is. We can't even depend on the government to deliver our mail. So how in the world are we going to depend on the government to handle our health care? I live in Atlanta, Georgia. And you should see the DMV here. And I'm sure the DMV where you live is awful too. But if you need to go to get another Social Security card in the Atlanta area and in any big city, all I wanted... I lost my Social Security card. I wanted a copy of it. You get 10 copies in your lifetime. I just needed one. I was there 4 hours before I could even see one person. Now, if I'm going in there just for a little card, not even to send a letter, not even to see a doctor, how do you think health care is going to be? And you know, all this free health care that people are saying, and we're going to talk about this in the second half hour, all this free health care that people think they're getting, it's not free. It's not free at all. If you did your homework, you would know that on January 1st, 2013, the average American household taxes are going to go up $3,800. Why is it going to go up $3,800? To pay for Obamacare. To pay for Obamacare. How's that insurance now looking for you? How's that free health care looking? Your taxes are going up on average of $3,800. Yes, some will be lower, some will be higher. But on average, $3,800. $3,800 if you're not a math major. How's that free health care working out? If you get a job with a large corporation and you have health care, your insurance doesn't even cost $3,800 a year. And if it does, you get to pick your own doctors. You get to go where you want, see the dentist you want. But do you think that's going to happen with the government? We need someone that is going to cut that crap out, cut the spending, cut the pork. Help us with the post office. The post office is just one area of the government. You think that's the only area of the government that I could name off that we need to reform? They keep raising the price of stamps, but yet they keep the same staff. Isn't that ridiculous? We're going to take a quick break. We're going to go into the second half of the show here in just a minute. We're going to take a news break. If you were just joining us, we have Dr. Carol Swain on in the first 15 minutes of the show. She's been on Fox News Channel's Hannity with Sean Hannity and many other programs. We're going to take a quick news break. We'll be right back right after this.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler.
It is in our possession, and our experts are analyzing the device.
House Homeland Security Committee Chair Peter King on an airline bomb plot foiled by the CIA.
The FBI confirming that the device they have is similar to the underwear bomb, and it does not contain metal, and there are improvements to the detonation mechanism. It was picked up apparently before the Yemeni suicide bomber had bought his plane ticket. The bomber's location is not publicly known at this time. U.S. officials also believe a Saudi bomb maker is behind these devices. U.S. officials believe Ibrahim al-Assiri is one of the best bomb makers working today because he uses these non-metallic explosives that evade traditional airline security.
Fox's Catherine Herridge. President Obama informed in April about the plot to bomb a U.S.-bound plane, urging U.S. intelligence agencies to do everything possible to prevent it. The investigation said to be ongoing, involving other countries. A plea to the president on an al-Qaeda hostage tape.
If you accept the demands, I live. If you don't accept the demands, then I die.
That 70-year-old American aid worker Warren Weinstein abducted in Lahore, Pakistan 9 months ago. The U.S. demanding his immediate release while saying it does not negotiate with al-Qaeda. Some brutal attacks in Pakistan, an attempt to send a message.
Taliban fighters ambushed a security checkpoint along the border with Afghanistan. 14 Pakistani soldiers dead, all but one beheaded. Two of the heads hung from poles in the center of town, the main community in the North Waziristan tribal area.
Fox News Radio's Emily Wither. A Memphis area mom and her three daughters feared kidnapped. They've been missing since April 27th.
We're not going to quit. We're not going to give up. It's not going to go away.
Jimmy Edwards, sheriff of Union County, Tennessee, kidnapping suspect Adam Mays, considered armed and dangerous. Police believe he's in Mississippi. You're listening to Fox News Radio, Fair and Balanced.
You're in the Fox Life.
Rolling Stones frontman Mick Jagger is hosting Saturday Night Live for the first time on May 19th. He will also be the show's musical guest. Robert Pattinson will play a real American hero, starring as the military interrogator who led the 2003 capture of Saddam Hussein in Mission Blacklist. Adam Yauch, one-third of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame hip-hop group The Beastie Boys, has died at age 47. Known as MCA, Yauch had been battling cancer since 2009. And Jennifer Lopez's newest music video, Follow the Leader, shows the idol judge topless, exposing a couple of fake tattoos. She also appears fully dressed in action hero garb while being chased around Acapulco. In Hollywood, Adam Housley, Fox News.
The Fox Light.
Keep listening for more Focus from the Fox Light on Fox News Talk.
The Wall Street type's in business suits. He wore a hoodie and jeans. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg talking up the social network's upcoming IPO.
After about 60 minutes of executive presentations and Q&A, the team was whisked away and off to their next location in Boston. They'll be on the road for about a week of similar pitch meetings across the country, with Facebook expecting to begin selling shares to the public on May 18th in what will become the largest tech IPO to date.
Shivani Joshi with Fox Business Network. A South Dakota company could not overcome a controversial nickname.
Beef Products Incorporated, shuttering processing plants in Amarillo, Texas, Garden City, Kansas, and Waterloo, Iowa, effective May 25th. A plant in South Sioux City, Nebraska, will remain open. The company blames what it calls unfounded attacks over a product it calls lean, finely textured beef, and critics call pink slime. As part of the process, bits of beef are heated and treated with a small amount of ammonia. Lisa Lucera, Fox News Radio.
650 employees losing their jobs. One of the most expensive musical instruments in the world, definitely a little worse for the wear.
A Stradivarius cello like the one you're hearing now, worth, by some estimates, at least $20 million, broken, reportedly during a photo shoot. An anonymous official at the Spanish Royal Palace, where the 17th century masterpiece is kept, declined to say exactly how the musical mishap occurred, but did reveal the broken piece was a 19th century replacement that joins the neck and the body. The official also said the legendary instrument can and will be repaired.
That's Fox Radio's Kirsten McNary, the cello part of a set known as the Quartet. A new socialist president elected in France. Voters in Greece punishing parties that backed austerity measures sent the Dow down 30. Fox News, we report, you decide.
future is in peril. What we need now is a shining hope. Bringing the nation back. One photo at a time. This is Aaron McCready.
From time to time, we've been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule. That government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people. But if no one among us is capable of governing himself, then who among us has the capacity to govern someone else? We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. It is time to check and reverse the growth of government, which shows signs of having grown beyond the consent of the governed. Can we solve the problems confronting us? Well, the answer is an unequivocal and emphatic yes. And after all, why shouldn't we believe that? We are Americans.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. If you're just joining us, you missed in the first half of the show Dr. Carol Swain. Dr. Swain's a political expert, law and political science professor at Vanderbilt University. You've missed her. She's been on numerous shows such as the Fox News Channel's Hannity with host Sean Hannity. But we're going to try to get her back on the air one day. We got cut short. We lost her. Her phone went out, and we tried to get her back, and she came back online, and then the call dropped again. So everybody out there wanting to hear Dr. Carol Swain, I apologize. We'll work on that. Tomorrow's show, we're going to have another show at 10 o'clock tomorrow. It's going to be another fantastic show. We're going to have a political expert, constitutional expert on there. You're going to go to our website, blogtalkradio.com/Aaron McCready. It's blogtalkradio.com/AaronMCCReady to see who the guest is. It's a big secret. So just make sure that you tune in tomorrow night and call in too, 646-200-3400. Ask any question that you want to know about the Constitution, about the current political state. That'll be during the first 10 minutes of the show. We're also going to have another guest on probably in the second half of the show, so stay tuned for that. But, you know, previously I was talking about, before we went on break, the government and how much money they're spending and how they just cannot seem to get their act together. I mean, my goodness, we don't even have a president and a vice president that can even decide whether or not gay marriage should be legal. Did you hear our VP, old good old Joe Biden, yesterday on Meet the Press, where he said he supports gay marriage? But then just take a listen to what how this interview went with Joe Biden, and then I'm going to play something that Obama said, and you tell me if these two can communicate well.
You raise social policy. I'm curious. You know, the president has said that his views on gay marriage, on same-sex marriage, have evolved, but he's opposed to it. You're opposed to it. Have your views evolved?
Look, I just think the good news is that as more and more Americans come to understand what this is all about is a simple proposition. Who do you love? Who do you love? And will you be loyal to the person you love? And that's what people are finding out is what all marriages at their root are about. Whether they're marriages of lesbians or gay men or heterosexuals.
Is that what you believe now?
That's what I believe.
And you're comfortable with same-sex marriage now?
I am Vice President of the United States of America. The president sets the policy. I am absolutely comfortable with the fact that men marrying men, women marrying women, and heterosexual men and women marrying men are entitled to the same exact rights, all the civil liberties. And quite frankly, I don't see much of a distinction beyond that.
In a second term, will this administration come out behind same-sex marriage, the institution of marriage?
I can't speak to that. I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you.
It sounds like you'd like to see it happen, if that's where the president
would get to. The president continues to fight, whether it's don't ask, don't tell, or whether it is making sure across the board that you cannot discriminate. Look at the executive orders he's put in place. Any hospital that gets federal funding, which is almost all of them, they can't deny a partner from being able to have access to their partner's bill or making a call on whether or not they, you know, it's just, this is evolving. And by the way, my measure, David, and I take a look at when things really begin to change, is when the social culture changes. I think Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody's ever done so far. And
is he really comparing Will and Grace to what's going on now in the country? Is he that out of touch? Does he really not know what's going on? But then listen to what Obama said. Biden's all for gay marriage. Listen to Obama.
With respect to the issue of whether gays and lesbians should be able to get married, I've spoken about this recently. As I've said, you know, my feelings about this are constantly evolving. I struggle with this. I have friends. I have people who work for me who are in powerful, strong, long-lasting gay or lesbian unions. And they are extraordinary people. And this is something that means a lot to them, and they care deeply about. At this point, what I've said is that my baseline is a strong civil union that provides them the protections and the legal rights that married couples have, and I think that, and I think that's the right thing to do. But I recognize that from their perspective, it is not enough, and I think this is something that we're going to continue to debate, and I personally am going to continue to wrestle with going forward.
He's going to continue to wrestle with it going forward, but then he has his VP saying that he's all for it. How can our government function well if the two people at the top can't even get the same story straight? I mean, really? I mean, does anybody else find that odd? Does anybody else find that odd out there that our president and vice president can't come up with the same story? The top two leaders of the country, the president, and then the person a heartbeat away from the presidency, on an issue like that, that's such a hot topic, they can't even figure out what's what. I mean, come on. Oh, my goodness. What's happening to the world? What's happening to our country? 646-200-3400. You can also go to blogtalkradio.com/AaronMcCready, AaronMcCready, join our online chat. We've got Adam in there. He's screening the calls and running our online chat. So if you want to talk to me, you got to talk to him. Be nice to Adam so you'll talk to me. He'll cut you off if you're one of those loons out there that call in sometimes. But you know what I was talking about earlier about Obamacare and people think it's going to be free. It's not going to be free. It's going to cost you $3,800 more. $3,800 more in taxes it's going to cost you. I mean, who likes that? Would you rather choose your own health care, choose your own doctor, than going to some government quack that can't even they just put you on a waiting list, that can't even see you timely? That your life means so much to them that if you get sick, they're just going to go ahead and let you die. I know there's some people out there that's like, oh, Aaron, you're just out to scare us. That's the truth. Go to other countries and look. Even Canada. People all over the world come to the United States for health care. We still have the best health care system in the world. Does it need to be fixed? Yes. But is it the best? Yes. If you disagree with me, you call into the show. I love people that disagree with me. You will talk about it, see if we can't come to some common ground. But then you know what? You have the leeches. The leeches, like the people in the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Occupy Atlanta movement, the Occupy Oakland movement that think that they deserve everything. And this is how stupid they are. Unintelligent they are. You know, you don't have to take my word for it. This is the leader that I'm getting ready to play that had an interview with Sean Hannity on the Fox News Channel. This is the leader, the founder of the Occupy Wall Street movement. You know, and back when they were occupying Atlanta, oh, I just love that. I mean, I thought I was going to have a heart attack right here in my chair. You know, I mean, just look around. They spray the anarchy signs on banks. They throw bricks through the windows of banks, through businesses. They think everything should be given them for free, that they shouldn't have to work. They're a bunch of bums. All the Wall Street occupiers are a bunch of bums. Nothing else. Listen to this. It's from the Sean Hannity show. Well, I guess it's Hannity on the Fox News Channel. But listen.
So what's wrong with capitalism as I described it?
Well, it's not working anymore.
Why is it not working?
I just told you it's completely failing people such as myself. I just told you.
Well, maybe how many hours did you spend down at Occupy Wall Street? How many days, hours, weeks did you spend there?
Oh, I couldn't.
Well, maybe if you weren't spending your time with the quote homeless people that were brought in by the police to rape people, maybe you could have been out looking for a job.
Oh, well, I'm actually starting to look for a job now because my funding's starting to run low. So, I mean, if you know anyone that's
hiring.
Where
does the funding come from, the school or from the government?
Yes.
You want the government
to
provide.
It's very complicated. I don't fully understand it myself.
Yeah, so it comes from the government and it comes from the school?
I guess so.
You don't even know. So people give you money to pay for your school and you have no idea. Where do you think
the
money comes from?
But they don't give me. They charge interest back on it.
All right, let me ask you. Well, do you expect the loan for free? Should you have free school, free college?
People should have free education.
And free health care?
Absolutely.
And free dental care?
Oh, God, yes.
And if you have children?
I could use some free dental care.
If you have children and you need a daycare, should the government give you daycare?
Yes.
And the government should give you a house to live in?
Should the government give you a house?
Should they give people transportation to get to work?
Yes, basic necessities such as these things should not. They shouldn't even be given to us by the government. The government and corporations should get off our backs, stop enslaving us through debt, so that we can actually do those things.
Who's going to pay for your house, your car, your dental care, your health care, your education? Who pays for that?
Nobody. It's all on debt. Nobody's paying for it.
Everything's free.
We're getting to that point. That's exactly where capitalism is heading.
Everything is free.
Look, seriously, this is
seriously
crazy.
You don't work. You get free money for school, and you're complaining.
Companies
and
like Google, the most successful companies these days, they give away their products and services for free, right?
So people like us, we
spend all this time working on these social networks, providing content for them that they sell for ad space. We work.
I have a suggestion for you.
Goods and services, capitalism is becoming increasingly free.
I think my
suggestion to you is that you should
I don't
listen,
need your suggestion.
I'm telling you,
I have a suggestion for you.
Crazy
I have a suggestion
now.
For you. You're 29 years old. Stop wasting your time at Occupy Wall Street. And here's a novel concept. Get up at 6 a.m., shovel some coffee down your throat, hit the pavement, find a job, get to work, stop whining, stop complaining, stop blaming, and get your out of bed like everybody else in America and get to work.
I'm down. Give me a job. I will go to work.
If you pound the pavement and stop hanging out at the Zuccotti Park, you might find one.
Hey, I'm online all day. I'm sending my
resume. I'm online all day.
You
lazy.
Found me on
online.
LinkedIn, too. You found me on
go
LinkedIn,
Go work
too.
As a cook. Go work as a dishwasher. Go work as a contractor. Go do something.
Something more menial. Will that make you happier?
Listen, I did it in my life, and guess what?
I've done it, too. I'm done with that.
Keep doing it. Good luck.
On.
Go get a job.
You don't want to do that.
That job's beneath you.
Yeah, definitely.
Hanging out with rapists, drug addicts, people having sex in public is more fun.
It's more dignity in that than it is hanging out on a show like this with you.
Okay, listen, I'm glad to say goodbye. See you later. Let not your heart be troubled, our great, great, great American panel. That is coming up next.
Is that not the most ridiculous thing you've heard? Like I've been saying all the time about these Wall Street idiots. The leader of the group, one of the founders of the group said that it is more dignifying to hang out with rapists and murderers than to be on air on a talk show. That's who's down there protesting. You know what? We should just let them protest. Because there's nothing anyone can say that goes against the Wall Street protesters than the protesters themselves. You know, and then have you ever heard of them? Have you ever heard them talk? You know, one person has a megaphone, then they repeat everything the guy with the megaphone says. You know, I can't believe Sean Hannity even had him on the show to dignify that. But you know what? It really points out, though, I guess it is a good thing because it points out their points as invalid, as dumb as they are. You know, it does make us all realize how what type of people go down there. You know, I want to talk a little bit about terrorism. And, you know, as you know, today we caught a terrorist trying to blow up a plane headed to the United States. And as I said before at the start of the show, we need to really profile. We really need to profile. It's not going to be the 85-year-old woman that can barely walk that's going through the metal detectors, but they frisk her anyways because they need to meet a quota. It's not going to be that person. You know, most of the terrorists come from the Middle East. It's a fact. Call me racist if you want to. I'm not a racist, but call me that if you want to. But, you know, the people on 9/11 came from the Middle East. And, yeah, you know, we do have some homegrown terrorists. That's unfortunate. But 9/11 didn't happen by homegrown terrorists. We just need to profile. You know, since the attacks of September 11th, there's been 42 terrorist plots against the United States. But you know what? The Barack Obama administration says, you know, oh, you know, it's all us, so we get all the credit. But it's years and years and years of going after people. Years of going after people. Yes, the Obama administration deserves a little bit of credit, but, you know, if they had their ways, we wouldn't even be in this situation to be able to catch them. You know, President Obama declared that the administration's intent was to close the detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay. President Obama banished terms like the long war, the global war on terrorism, unlawful combatants, and he also refused to identify the Islamist terrorist groups that they use religion to justify the slaughter of innocents to promote radical agendas. That's the president that we have right now. The president that just wants to go out there, get all the credit, but do none of the work. But what we're going to have to do when it comes to terrorism, especially terrorism, if we want to win the White House back, if we want Mitt Romney to win the White House, we need to preserve the existing counterterrorism and intelligence tools. The Patriot Act. You know, those are essential to maintain the security of the United States and to combat the terrorist threats. The Patriot Act, if you don't know, but some of the provisions were to modernize the intelligence and legal authorities and that ensure that the investigators have the same tools that are available to people that work criminal cases. And then also to help the FBI and CIA work together more. And that's where the enhanced domestic and international information sharing efforts come from. And you can go, you know, read this on the Heritage Foundation's website. But we also need to plug the gaps and then stop terrorist travel. The terrorist that wanted to blow up that plane didn't come from the United States. He came from abroad somewhere. We need to stop their travel. You know, we need to stop trying to get every airport to be like Fort Knox. The best way to discourage terrorist plots or to frustrate them is to do it before they begin. Just frustrate them so much that they'll be so aggravated they won't even try it. You know, we need to have stronger visa programs. We need to investigate people that want to get visas. We need to expand the PNR. If you don't know what the PNR is, it's called the passenger name record. And as well as sharing the visa waiver program, which allows foreign travelers from member nations to travel to the United States without a visa. We need to stop that. You know, we're in a post-9/11 world. And I know that happened back in 2001. We're in 2012. I know that happened back in 2001. But we're in a post-9/11 world. We don't need to let people from partner countries travel without visas. I believe in control what you have control over. And we need to cut that out. We need to stay committed to Afghanistan. Because if we leave Afghanistan and don't have some type of presence there, then the terrorists, they're going to root back up. They're like weeds. If you don't keep spraying the spray on the weeds, they're going to grow back. The spray only lasts for so long. You know, and it's unfortunate that we need to have a presence there, but you know what? What's better, have a presence there or leave? And then 10 years later, 20 years later, 3,000 more Americans die. I don't know about you, but I'd rather stay there. Change it from within. You know, we need to address the threat, speaking of Afghanistan, posed by state-sponsored terrorism. The administration has not given enough attention to the threat of the state-sponsored terrorism. Now, on June 28, 2011, almost a year from now, the White House released its new national strategy for counterterrorism. And out of that 19-page document, you know what? It makes only one reference to Iran. Iran's leaders have came over to the United States, to the UN, and said how they want to destroy the United States. They said it to our faces. They didn't say it behind our backs. They said it to our faces. And it only mentions one word of Iran. And the subject of the state-sponsored terrorism, where it comes from Iran, Venezuela, wherever, it's ignored. You know, Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, it ignores all those in that report, a 19-page report. It should have been more than 19 pages. But just to let you know, from 1969 to 2009, there were 38,345 terrorist threats. Only 7.8 of those attacks were directed at the United States, but 43% of the attacks were against our military installations. We need to continually remain vigilant at home and abroad. But you know what? I really hope you enjoyed the show today. We did have the good doctor on, Dr. Swain. Carol Swain. She did get cut off earlier, so I do apologize for that. We tried to get her back, couldn't reestablish the line. We'll try to have her back another day. But tune in tomorrow, where we have another fabulous guest. We're going to have two tomorrow. One in the first half, one in the second half. So go to blogtalkradio.com/AaronMcCready to find out who that guest is. I'm going to post another guest up either tonight or tomorrow, so we'll have a full hour of guests and topics. And the call-in number for you to call in. Again, remember, I know it's hard out there, but just keep your head up. Keep looking forward, and it will get better. We've been through much worse. We'll see you tomorrow night at 10 o'clock.